Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Sheila.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Sheila.
You've changed it again. That's fine.
Oh, Dr. Redmond again. Oh, I guess I'm not paying attention.
It's one of those days.
I'm just not paying attention today.
Literally no one is judging you. Like, that is the amount of people who are judged. I mean, other than me.
Yeah, well, of course, you're always judging.
I know. I'm terrible about that. But anyway, yeah, and as promised, we're here to talk about the Criminal Minds spinoff that was less successful of the two, although let's be honest, neither of them was successful. Beyond Borders lasted 2 seasons to this Suspect Behavior's 1 season, but you know what? They were both 13-episode seasons, so it's not like it was a rollicking success either. I don't know why they got behind that, but wouldn't get behind this, but hopefully over the next 13 episodes, 7 episodes of this show, we are going to figure that out.
Oh, I know why they didn't get behind.
Okay, yeah, there's actually a lot of good reasons.
Got behind the other one.
There's actually a ton of good reasons, come to think of it. But I wanted to pretend there was going to be a mystery. So anyway, let's start off at the top, which is, I realized something when I was watching the first episode. So
okay.
Before I watched this first episode, right, I had been thinking, I wonder why Richard Schiff is on this show.
Okay.
Because they never had Aaron, you know, the boss of the BAU, is basically never on the show. Like, she's on like twice a year.
Every now and then.
Yeah. And then it's kind of hilarious that after she gets killed off, they nominally have a boss, but he never appears. He appears even less than Aaron does. They have like one plot to do with him and JJ. And once that plot's over, they just don't have a boss, basically.
Yeah.
And I always found that strange. So I was thinking, well, you know, they're so used to not having a boss, right? Why on earth did they feel they needed Richard Schiff on the show? Because he plays the director of the FBI, who apparently does not have, like, a ton on his plate. So he could just go and hang out with...
the guys.
Go hang out with Forrest Whitaker and the guys whenever he feels like it. And the character is obviously an old friend of Forrest Whitaker's, and I think it's clear that Forrest Whitaker only has the leeway he does to operate the way he wants to because of his pre-existing relationship with the Richard Schiff director character. I think the show makes that clear. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is why they thought they needed this at all. Like, why did they think, oh, well, we need someone to be the boss. And do you know what it took for me to realize that?
Okay, tell me.
I'll just tell you. Watching the first episode of Criminal Minds to not have Thomas Gibson in it.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Because here's the thing. I don't know if they find a balance later on, if they find a way to figure out how to do this show.
No.
Okay, they never do. Because
no,
I watched this first episode without Thomas Gibson, and it's like, oh my god, you need a grounding force.
Yeah.
You need a guy with some authority. You need a dad. And when he was putting together, when he was putting together the show, Suspect Behavior, he fundamentally understood that Forrest Whitaker could not do that for a team. He cannot be the dad. He cannot be the grounding influence. He cannot be the person who centers people. Fundamentally, that's not who Forrest Whitaker is. Forrest Whitaker is an unbalancing presence that makes you feel uncomfortable watching him, but it's compelling to watch.
Yes.
And so when he was putting together the show and he cast Forrest Whitaker, he was like, oh my god, I need someone to be the grounding, centering force.
Yep.
And so he's like, let's get Richard Schiff in there.
Yep.
And it wasn't until I saw what an episode of Criminal Minds looked like without Thomas Gibson that I realized how smart the addition of Richard Schiff was. But that is what sold me on Richard Schiff.
Well,
it's like, now I have so much more respect for how the show was constructed, because the first time I watched it, I'm like, I feel like it's a waste to have him here. No, you need that.
Well, of course you need it. You need a boss. And Criminal Minds has never, ever recovered from the loss of Thomas Gibson.
Yeah.
Because Paget Brewster
can't
do it.
No, that's not her role on the team. That's not how she feels when she's on the show. Like, it just doesn't make sense, you know?
Yeah, all she does is say wheels up. Like, they give her Thomas Gibson's lines.
Yeah.
But she just, it just doesn't work. No. Let's put it this way. I really wonder whether her heart was in it.
I can't imagine. How could it be? After all that drama? How could it be? But you know what? We're going to have plenty of time to talk about seasons 12 through 15 when the show gets there. I just wanted to make that one observation based on this episode of the first episode of this show and how much more respect I have for it now that I've seen what it looks like when you don't have that Thomas Gibson, that Richard Schiff, that guy who's there to say, no, I'm the voice of reason. I'm the responsible one. You need to, you know, my presence is necessary for this thing to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a lot more respect for the choice now. So let's kick it off with the synopsis.
Okay, I have to take them from IMDb because there are none on Wikipedia.
No! Oh my God, we could write the Wikipedia synopsises.
Well, we could do. We could do a Wikipedia page.
If someone else hasn't already, let's get in there.
Well, as far as I can remember, I went looking for it. There's nothing there.
Let's do it.
Okay. Okay, so the first one. This says two of a kind, but that's not what it's called.
I'm so confused right now.
No, the first episode, right?
Yeah.
Like, they have a title, Two of a Kind, and I don't think that's the episode title.
Is it? I mean, I don't remember.
I don't either. Anyway, I'll go back and look at it, I guess.
Just
I
read the synopsis.
Cooper and his Red Cell team are called to Cleveland to investigate a series of child abductions.
I mean, that is the episode we watched, so.
Yeah. It wasn't a problem of the synopsis. I mean, it's just one child abduction.
You were just confused
about
the title.
That's why they're called. Yeah. Okay. I was just confused about the title. Except that it's not a series. They're called in because
they are called in because of a single abduction, and then they find out about the series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's it.
Okay.
What do you want? I mean,
no, I mean, hey, it's IMDb. They never have elaborate synopses. So first off, there is there are two problems at the core of this show. One is they want to act like there is some difference between how Forrest Whitaker's team operates and how the team on the main show operate. And there just isn't. The only differences are A, they dress less professionally. B, they work out of a gym instead of Quantico. But it's like the idea that they introduced the concept of a rapid response team. Whenever a kid gets kidnapped anywhere in America, you know, the main BAU team is there in 3 hours. So how much more of a rapid response team can you have? It's kind of a ridiculous idea.
I'm not so hard on it, and I don't think it's sort of ridiculous, partly because the characters are different, and because I do think that they have
a wider variety of skills. Yes.
A wider variety of skills. I think the show is a hell of a lot. Like, what I would say, after watching the first 2.5 episodes.
You ran ahead on me. You shouldn't do that.
No, I stopped myself.
Okay, good.
I stopped myself. Okay? But I watched those first two episodes. But I'm going, this was...
It's closer
Bernero's,
to something like...
Just a minute.
Unsub.
Yeah, it's closer to Unsub, but it's also Bonero's his middle finger at CBS.
Okay. Well, how do you mean that?
Okay. Like, I was looking at this and I'm going, first of all, Cooper is not, like, it's Forrest Whitaker, so he's going to do it differently, but he's not that different from Mandy Patinkin.
No, like you're saying the character at its core.
The character at its core, I think that this and is they're starting to handle these different episodes. It's almost as if Bernero has not had control over some of the issues, because See No Evil is about a nucleator, like someone who takes out people's eyes, right? And remember how hard you were on the previous one, and you have to remember the Criminal Minds episodes.
I do.
You have to think about, and then, you know, Lonely Hearts, so the second one we're going to do, right? It's just, this one makes, the show makes more sense. It's as if Bernero had tighter control over the show.
Right.
He and Chris Mundy apparently are the creators.
Okay.
And then he had different people in to write. It's that was just my, it's a sense that I can't pin down.
Well, I mean, it's, and I mean, that's like what we're going to investigate as we go forward. I will say it is definitely, these first two episodes are tighter episodes than Criminal Minds generally does. Like, Criminal Minds tends to take these weird shots all over the place, and this show is less likely to do that thing that Criminal Minds does, where they just start six different people in every scene are just like, here's three different theories and trivia about serial killers.
Yeah, we don't get
this all is of much this. More focused on the elements of the investigation in both of these two episodes.
Yeah, it's clear. Right. And in this one, too, I mean, what you see is, look, this is not about the perpetrator. It's about rescuing two little girls.
Yeah.
Right. When Forrest Whitaker, when Sam Cooper, right, lays mm-hmm. into Sims.
Yes.
Michael Kelly. Right. The Michael,
yeah, Michael Kelly part
character. It's little things like that that I'm going, okay, that line is.
That
is
moment where he's like, say, he's trying to say, we've got to focus on the people. We've got to focus on the victims. This isn't about glorifying murder the way Criminal Minds can do from time to time.
There you go. Like, to me, like it wasn't until actually I got to the third episode that it kind
clicked
okay. that I was looking at these little things, but the third episode when they began and they make this, but there are hardly any. And I'm thinking back to that horrible episode with the taxidermist. And I'm going, I wonder. And then you go back and you look at these. They're just little things that he's creating.
That are calling back to unsatisfying episodes. Okay, well.
Either unsatisfying or points to be made. So we'll look for that as we're going forward.
Yeah, okay.
I also think, as I said, he's got tighter control of this.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
I think it strikes me with these first two episodes, they're pretty straightforward. Well, not straightforward. They're clear. There aren't an awful lot of...
Yeah.
They treat the local cops better.
That is definitely true.
No, I mean, you can see
in
that
both episodes
is,
the local cops are full partners in the investigation.
I will tell you that what you're getting here is what Edward Bernero wanted to do with Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, he wasn't allowed to.
Well, it's funny because when you watch Criminal Minds, right, and that's something that I noticed with these two, you were so how shall I put this? Focused on the format, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's this weird thing when you watch Criminal Minds where it's like, okay, well, now they've got enough theories together, so now they're going to do the profile scene where they gather all the cops together and they talk about the killer really for the audience, but, you know, it's kind of wasting our time because the audience already knows, like, has already been watching all of this stuff.
We don't know who they're telling.
Yeah, and it's like, no, they're talking to the cops, or they're talking to the press, but the thing is, it always feels like a waste of the time, because the show is never willing to have the cops or the press involved in catching anyone, so why are they bothering with the scene? And it's so they can just restate all of this psychological research they did for the people watching the show at home. I'm like, that's great and all, but is that really the best use of our time? Right. And with this show, it's like, no, we're not going to do that thing where we over explain it to the audience. We're not going to do that thing where we don't trust the audience to understand what's going on. This is a show that seems to say, we know you already watch Criminal Minds. We know you already like the show. We're just going to go for it. And that really impressed me in these first two episodes.
There's still
a lot of thought given to what the psychology of the characters is. I'm not denying that, right?
And that's okay.
Oh, no, of course. That's not a complaint. But the focus that they put on the moment-to-moment, just we are trying to solve a case, rather than we are spending time with our theories and are trying to figure out what's going on with this guy psychologically. Like you say, in that first episode, the focus remains on the little girl.
Yes. And then the second little girl. I mean, that is such a scene you would never see in Criminal Minds, where Cooper sends Garofalo off or sends the other members of the team off to do their stuff. He was going to go, and he said, no. He's going to stay there and talk to this woman whose child was abducted 9 days before.
Here's the thing. Was it a mistake to make this the first episode, right? Because this isn't the pilot. Hopefully you'll notice, and if you don't notice, I'll point out to you what the actual pilot is. But I'll put it this way. You'll be able to notice it when you watch the episode, when I tell you. The first episode of the show was meant to be Janine Garofalo joins the team and meets everybody, and we're introducing the team to everybody through her eyes. That was meant to be the first episode. There is an episode where you can clearly tell that they have re-edited it to cut out her introduction, but it's obviously intended to be the first episode. But instead of that episode, they went with this one. And what I want to know is it a statement of intent for the show? They made the very first episode one about bias, racial bias in policing.
Quite possibly.
Criminal Minds doesn't address stuff like this.
No, the thing is that they don't start screaming at these people. They just listen to the cop, and the cop says, "Look, we got this many." He said, "We have hardly any staff for this neighborhood. And what are you going to do?"
Like, it's a racial question and it's an economic question.
Yeah,
because this part of town is poor. They're not delivering a lot to the tax base. Ergo, in our system, we can't provide them the kind of, like, extra resources we put into the places that are delivering to the tax base. And when it comes right down to it, it is a numbers game. And it's tragic. It's horrible that it's a numbers game. But all the characters understand that that's true.
Yeah, they don't even question it. They don't make any stupid comments about it.
They don't yell at the cops for, you weren't treating, you know, you should be treating all of these. They don't know. They get that this is how the world, all of these characters live in the real world.
They don't like it. They don't like it.
They don't approve of it, but they know where they live. And that is a very different from the worldview of Criminal Minds, where, as we always say, the team are magicians.
Yeah.
Who just show up and solve everybody's problems.
Yeah. Like, which brings us to Merlin. That's one of the other problems. I think we're going to be dealing with this suspect behavior a little bit differently than we are with Criminal Minds.
Absolutely.
I think you were right. You always said it was a mistake that they kept Kristen Van Ness in as Garcia in as their
absolutely is.
And I think that they had Kevin. They could have, I suspect they didn't have the money to hire somebody else. And it was easy because she never does anything but appear basically on screen or voice over. So it wasn't a lot of her time.
No, you could film her whole season in a week.
Yeah. And so that worked. And I can understand that that was a cost saving measure, and that's probably why they did it.
Yep. Probably.
And they have her behave differently.
Yeah.
She behaves differently and it's noticeable.
That's true.
You know, so it's at like kudos to her because she does pull it off. Mm-hmm. It just seems that it would have worked a little bit better. They're also more realistic about what they can find and what they can't find. And you get a little bit more. It's even after you've watched the Unsub, I would also say, right, in some ways, when you're watching these two episodes, Cooper is more, particularly when he's at the church at the end. Remember?
Oh, we're not talking about the second episode yet, but yes.
Okay, but he's more, I guess I'm sort of talking about these two as a unit almost.
Yeah.
Because he's more your Webster.
Yes.
It's set up a lot more like Unsub and like the inside.
Yeah.
You see that there's a lot more of this boring work.
Oh, totally.
You know, you don't have, and nobody kicks as such, goes in, you know, with their muscles and kicks down doors. It's an entirely different show.
Completely different aesthetic, completely different feel.
Yeah. And I think that Webster, and you can see that in the first, that Cooper is a version of Webster.
Yeah.
Because he really, we never see that with Webster. Okay.
No.
So he's a combination almost of Webster and Gideon.
I can see that. Yeah.
You know, that because it was Gideon who could actually, you know, almost break down because he could see, he could feel.
He got too close to the minds of these people.
The minds of these people. And we suspect that Webster is the same way. We never got a chance to find out. So I think Cooper is that kind of a mix that he can run the team. He can run the team because they all respect him and what he can do. And then the other thing, right, is that he still has that, but he needs the Schiff character, and you're right about that.
Yeah, you need someone to grab.
He's stable
too
boss.
Twitchy. He's too harsh. He's too twitchy. He's too uneven. You need a stabilizing force, right? And that is why. And the thing is, when Criminal Minds was first created, Ed Bernero, not Ed Bernero, the original writer.
Jeff Davis.
Jeff Davis understood you can have, right? You can have a Will Graham, but you need I'm blanking on Lawrence Fishburne's character's name. His boss.
FBI. No. Isn't that terrible?
Bad. This Jack. Is
bad Jack.
You need Jack there to balance him. And that's what Aaron was for. You
yeah,
got
and
Gideon
what,
and you got Aaron. And then Gideon left and all the rest of the team got to take up various parts of Gideon's role. But Aaron stayed as the balancing, mature, paternal force.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know,
and
what
in
else?
This show, again, you got your Will Graham type. Mm-hmm. But Will Graham is also the leader and everybody respects him. And he has some measure of authority, but you need someone over him to balance it out.
Yeah, and the balancing is not over Cooper's insights. It's just keeping him almost calm and
keeping him sane.
And the interesting thing is the Garofalo, Jeannie Garofalo's character, right, is very different. She is the second in command ultimately.
Yeah.
Right? The other three have their specializations, but she's the second in command.
Well,
it's a very strange team.
Right. As you'll see, and I assume this is something that was cut out of the episode that was the original pilot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you watch that episode, I'm going to suspect that originally there was a scene where she is essentially sent in by Richard Schiff to make sure this whole thing doesn't go off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's what her character is meant to be.
Yeah, because after all, we did see the backdoor pilot.
Yes.
Where this is the creation, they're just creating this new team.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he has put this new team together.
Yeah, and Schiff can't be there all the time, so he sends in Garofalo.
Yeah, he sends in Garofalo to be his eyes and ears on the team and to make sure these people don't go off the rails.
Yeah.
And that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And so you have these different characters. And as I said, I love Constantine. What can I say?
Isn't Matt Ryan the best?
Matt Ryan is so good.
He's so much fun.
The whole, it has such a different feel. And as I say, it's what Bernero wanted Criminal Minds to be.
Yeah.
Although what I would say, of course, again, it takes you back to the inside in terms of, it's like, the funny thing is it's not structured like the inside, but it also isn't structured like Criminal Minds.
Not at all.
But it has that same, it is hard to watch, even, you know, even though we still have, once we have met children, they don't die.
They generally survive, yeah.
Okay, but you have already 3 dead children, as it turns out, before these two. And it is so sad. And when they talk to the father, right, don't over push it. They have to talk to the father to find out what happened.
It doesn't reach that exploitative level.
Yeah. And at the end, you just see him sitting there with his head in his hands.
I know.
That's all. And you know, I guess I would say so far with the first 2 episodes, it respects the audience a lot more.
Oh, I would say that is a very fair assessment.
You know,
I feel like it definitely respects the audience much more than Criminal Minds does.
But it is dark. It's the second episode where it just gets.
All right. So let's just do a little plot stuff about the first episode before we move on.
Yeah.
So first off, the only thing I'll really trigger about this episode is I just don't believe that geographic profiling can get them to that body dump site. I feel like that's such a cheat. And the thing is, all you needed was like some video footage, some witness. Just give me some reason to believe that specific van was spotted in that specific area on multiple occasions. And I'd be like, yeah, you can get there. But they're like, nope, just we looked at where he was, the directions he was driving in, and we're like, yeah, this is definitely where he was going.
But you know,
this is
the
only vacant lot in the area. But then the end of the frigging episode shows that, well, you know, he had a van. He could have driven out to the woods anytime he wanted. He owned a property out there.
Yeah, but he didn't want to contaminate his daughter's burial site.
But my point is, there's plenty of woods out there.
Yeah. Okay, listen, but you know what struck me when I was watching the Geographic? They had a computer do it, which only proves you don't need Reed. Reed and his Venn diagrams.
Yeah,
and at least, and she also makes it clear that it can't give you a location. It gives you a bunch of possibilities. That's all. And then they had to make a guess from that.
And then they had to make a guess based on, and it's like, yeah, you're right. It's a more realistic version of geographic profiling than we've ever seen on the show before, but it's still kind of silly.
Well, never mind. That was my only thing.
I'm not harping on it. I'm just saying. I'm not going to give this show a pass just because it's a better show when it does geographic profiling nonsense. Okay. Just because it's a better show, I'm not going to like sign off on it. Okay, that was one thing. And the second thing is, once they figure out like that it's the focus of these, it's really smart. That it's like, once they realize it's all the same killer, I do really like how they focus. Okay, well, we have to focus on, and it's much easier to find, white guys who lost their African-American daughter.
Yeah.
And it's like, and that's such a smart way to handle it. It's like, okay, well, you've just, like, by figuring that out, by this other woman coming in with this other case, that was the key they needed to figure the guy out.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Because they had to change, as they said. Okay, so there's no sign of sexual assault. There's no nothing.
Nope.
Okay, something else is going on. And it was that, like, it just strikes me as a lot more.
Oh, yeah. It's tighter.
It's tighter.
It's tighter. And I'm really happy about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was very, like I said, I was happy watching this first episode again. And I was very impressed that it's like, yeah, I had seeing where Criminal Minds went after this, you know, again, I'm now in season 12. Which,
lucky you.
Jesus. But yeah, seeing where Criminal Minds went after this, it's weird because this really was a whole different direction for the franchise and show.
Yeah. And I
and
think
it's such a tragedy in a lot of ways that this thing didn't get to keep going. But I have a feeling that's something you're going to be hearing from us a lot over the next little while.
And your point of one of the reasons it was canceled, they said, was that nobody was watching it particularly. Yeah. What I would say is that you were right that, and I think we discussed this at the time that it happened. It's like you watch Criminal Minds and then you go to this, which is so much darker.
Yeah, so much darker, so much more unpleasant, and in a lot of ways, so much realer.
And smarter.
And considering realer, more unpleasant, smarter, let's move on to the second episode, which is even better than the first episode.
Yes. Lonely Heart.
Oh, my God. This is a rough hour of television.
This was hard to watch.
It is. Oh, God. Like, even remembering the whole plot, it is hard to watch this episode.
Yeah.
All right. Hit us with the synopsis.
Oh, yes. I have to hit you with the synopsis.
You too. Sorry. That's fine.
I do. Where is that? Oh, I hate this. The Red Cell team travels to Ohio to track down a killer targeting single businessmen.
Okay.
Okay. At least that's how it looks in the beginning.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is what's happening. It's just much more complicated than that.
It gets much more complicated. and it flows so much better. It was it was hard. You see it opening up. You see the blonde-haired woman. And, you know, so this is, as I say, this is the retake of the episode that... You see, this is what I see as I'm watching these things. I'm going, okay, so he was as unhappy with that previous episode as we were.
Specifically, tell them which episode we're talking about.
Oh, the Las Vegas one, where the girl should have been a victim of incest.
Father, yeah, the pleasure is my business.
Pleasure is my business. Yeah. That we say had to have been chopped up horribly, and that's why it was so bad. Yeah. Whereas this one is cohesive from beginning to end, and even... I had forgotten that it was the lawyer.
Yes.
Like, I had actually forgotten that it was his lawyer who was...
The one doing the killing.
The one doing the killing.
Yeah. I was... I had not, but it's... I mean, it's such a good reveal.
Yeah, it was so good because you're watching because it kind of sets up, but it doesn't that...
It doesn't get in your face about it. All of the clues are there if you're paying attention. It's never in your face about it.
No.
Like, they just show you their interactions, and they show their interactions in such a way that you, the audience, can notice it, and you might not realize what you're noticing at the time, but when the two of them sit there and look at the video and start talking about it, they're like, of course it's clear how he was treating her. Of course, this is what this guy does. This is how he treats women. This is what we've been talking about all this time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's
and the fact that it's his lawyer means they didn't notice it right away.
Yeah.
Because you expect, right? You're watching a jerk yell at his lawyer. You don't think of the other dynamic that's going on.
Yeah. And they don't. And it makes sense that they don't see it right away. Yes.
Because you expect certain kinds of social interaction. And it's not crazy for a psychopath to yell at his lawyer.
No, not at all. Particularly since they've threatened to take away any of his privilege. All of his privileges.
He's going to lose his window.
Yep. He'll never be able to.
Look at the sun again.
And he'll only be able to have male lawyers.
Yep. He's not going to be able to talk to another woman for the rest of his life.
Oh my god. And he was so creepy.
Oh, so, such a creepy guy. Such a good performance, such a creepy actor. Like, way to go, this performance.
Oh.
And what I found really interesting in the episode, right, Like right from the start is, again, it's really good use of examining an incredibly specific MO, right?
Yeah.
Because they've got the hard evidence in the case, which is this woman, right, is perching a chair next to where the person is dying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously she's watching people die, right? And then what I love is the steps it takes to get there, because they like have to find is that a motive? Is that a MO we've seen before? And it is. But the thing is, the guy who they caught, the woman that he did that to, because she was 14 at the time, the girl at the time he did that to, never went to the cops because she was terrified and thought she would be blamed. And, oh my God, is this the sub-theme of this episode, the way women are brutally treated?
Yeah.
I mean, this is an episode that is one hell of an attack on the treatment of women. Oh my God. Because she's like, you hear her saying, you're like, I wish she could have just called the cops. But I completely understand why she would be afraid that she would be blamed for what happened.
Well, the mother backed her up 100%, didn't blame her daughter. Like, we have a decent mother.
Wanted to protect her from the world that was going to come after her for this. Which absolutely would have happened. And the thing is, I love that they justify it completely logically, because, well, it wouldn't have done any difference. The guy's in jail.
Yeah.
What would that have changed?
Mm-hmm.
That's so smart. And it's like, you can see where they weren't being awful. They weren't being stupid about this. They're like, no, like, it's not going to change anything. The guy's in jail. So what's the downside of her keeping it to herself? And of course, they wouldn't see any downside to that. Yeah, it's such a smart episode. Because they get there in such a believable way.
Yeah.
Like, I totally understand every step they took to get to that conclusion. It was just so beautifully written. Like, such a smart episode. And then it ends in such a brutal fashion.
Well, yeah. I mean, well...
Mm.
But they manage, but she does survive, the 14-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah, of course. No. And I mean, she's 20 or 18 or something now.
Now, yes.
But yeah. But the how rough it is going up there, right, on the way
getting there.
There.
And watching the lawyer. And the thing is that you're seeing before, right, how she's sitting there with that yellow hair. And what's happening to me? Why am I doing this?
Yep.
You know, and
she's completely lost control of her life.
Yeah, completely.
She has become so wrapped up in her relationship with this psychopath. She feels like she doesn't have any control over anything in her life. And it's just horrible to watch.
Yeah, it's just horrible, horrible to watch.
Oh.
Oh.
No, it's a strong episode. Like, if you didn't watch the show, you really, when it was originally on, you missed some kind of amazing stuff. Because... And it doesn't blame this character at all,
uh-uh.
Right? Because the way the show is so sympathetic to how these women, it's right there, right? It's right there in why this girl at the time didn't call the cops.
Yeah.
Like the expectations that they have for women, the way women are treated, and all of that, you know why she didn't call the cops. Of course she didn't call the cops. And then how women are treated and all of this stuff gets fed back into, well, at the end, you know, like, of course this woman was able to be totally psychologically destroyed, this guy. Look at the way society has beaten down his other victims. This 14-year-old girl who knew that she would be crushed because of how the world would think of her if she was dating a 25-year-old man. They would have said it was her fault for getting into it. And that's the thing. It's like all of these women, and the show manages to not blame these women for getting sucked in by him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the show understands that society normally does blame these women. How could she end up with such a scumbag? These women bring these things on themselves, is what people say. And the fact that the team is right away is so sensitive to not think of that for a second.
Yeah. And this is where I go. Thumbing your friggin' middle finger at CBS.
Oh. Yeah. And the way it treats
because you've said that about, you know, when we were doing The Inside, you said something. What was it? Which one was it? I can't remember. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
But we were talking about this, and I'm going here, and this is probably, when I keep saying it, it's maybe Bernero's vision of how the show should have gone, because right. You can't say that about Criminal Minds.
No.
There's no consistency. You have some writers, and they get away with it. There's no overarching. And as I said, and the way Pleasure Is My Business was butchered was just criminal, because there was a perfectly good episode there that they couldn't tell.
Yeah.
However, this again is going to appeal to the inside viewers, and it's going appeal to unsub viewers. Not that there were many of them.
in either of those cases.
And it clearly didn't appeal to Criminal Minds viewers. Because it was bleaker.
It was bleaker. It's harder to watch.
Bleak episode. This is no, we didn't go to the police and give him that information, because what good would it have done? He was already in jail. It's that simple. And I'm not going to destroy. I mean, people sometimes, I don't know why everybody thinks you need to go and you need to sue and you need to put your dirty linen all out in public. Well, sometimes no.
No, I mean, sometimes if that's the only way to bring somebody to justice.
Well, that's.
Yeah, I get why you feel you have to do that. But in this case, she found out, oh, the guy's already in jail. Well, then we can just pretend this never happened. And you know why they want to do that so badly. And you totally understand where the characters are coming from.
So we now have two middle fingers rewriting, but it is again, and you saw that with the first episode. I mean, and the statement is there, and maybe that's why it was shifted around so that that first episode became the first episode, is because it's stated right there. No, we are concerned with the victims. There are two little girls out there we need to find. We don't, it's not that. And if we happen to catch
the guy, fantastic.
At the same time, fine.
But that's not our priority.
That's not our priority. And here, it is not our priority to put these women through even more crap.
Trauma. Same thing.
It's, we need to stop this. And we need to stop the next victims.
We need to stop the next victim.
Means we do have to find, in this case, who's doing this.
Yeah.
But they already figured out that the guy knew who was doing it.
Of course, they knew right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. They knew right away, but they just couldn't prove it and they couldn't get to him.
And I love the scene. I love the scene where he sends in Garofalo, right?
I know.
He sets in Beth Griffith is her name.
Thank you.
They set in Beth, right, to go and talk to him. I just loved it.
It was right. And the thing is, I've criticized on the show, right, on Criminal Minds, how they do that ridiculous thing where they don't do it much in the later seasons, but they're like, we'll show him. When we got a witness who's a sexist, we'll send in a lady to talk to him to put it on edge. Yeah, but he's a witness. You don't want to put witnesses on edge.
No.
No, but here, like, they need to get, in this case, he's the killer. He knows who did it, and they need to take him out of his comfort zone. And this is a man who has entirely defined himself by his ability to control women.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, we can go into and the show touches a little on what in his childhood could have caused that. But that is how he defines himself. That is who he thinks he is. He is a guy who has to get one over on women around him.
Which gets us to another thing that doesn't bother me about this show. I don't care about the backgrounds of the two criminals that we've got on this show. Because, it would be nice to have a little bit, but I have complained in Criminal Minds. Well, I want some backstory here. Why? Yeah. Because you always give us backstory.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, out of the clear blue, you're going to leave a whole episode hanging, and all of a sudden you've done this. No.
No, I know.
I mean, there are so many problems that in Criminal Minds that you don't have here.
No, you really don't.
You just don't. I mean, that. Now, I don't even think in this episode that there are even any little quibbles. I can't think of anything. It was just
It's a strong episode from beginning to end. I would agree with you 100%.
You know, like, I felt so for that little girl who, when she was 14, you know, and she's talking to this guy and he's talking about, and then but she was smart enough.
Yep.
To just hold her breath so he thought she could die.
God, that horrifying story we hear.
Oh, it was just horrifying, you know. And then she was able to call 911 and they saved her.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, so he wants to kill her because she got away.
He needs to finish that. And of course, they're able to get there because they've heard his story, right? They've heard his story and him knowing he's got... And the crazy part is... He might not have known she survived until the moment they put her picture in front of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that could be the moment he found out. And as they said, that's why his eyes became laser focused on her picture.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, the one thing I will say is, I will say that's the thing I always do about Criminal Minds, which is, you could have called a local cop. You could have had a cop. There was a cop closer to that girl's house than you were.
Okay, so there is one little.
But that's it. But I mean, that's just the nature of Criminal Minds. They always want their people to be the ones who rush in, which leads to like some truly hilarious stuff in the later seasons.
Yes.
Nope. Just how desperate they are to make sure. No, it's always got to be the team who makes the arrest. It's always got to be the team who's there. And I'm like, yeah. Sometimes doing that gets people killed, though. And there's no nice way to say that, but Ed Bernero's daughter got killed because they didn't just call the cops. And if you know what I'm talking about when I say that, congratulations, you've been listening to this show for a while. Oh, seriously, though. No, I mean, it's a really strong first two episodes.
Yeah.
And I maintain, and I really do maintain that it was a mistake, and it has such its own voice.
Yeah.
That I really think it was a mistake to put Penelope in there.
Yeah, no.
And you say it didn't have, my solution was, we've already got a character the fans like in Kevin.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Kevin's right there, the fans like him, and just pop him in there. It'd be fine. Right? Yes, and everyone would be happy with it, everyone would be happy to have him there. You know, give him a day job, but it's has such its own tone. You're right that Kristen Vangsness does a different version of Penelope, but it's still so grounding the show in the world of Criminal Minds, and this show really needed to be its own thing.
Yeah, and I think, but I do think that it was probably cost saving.
Maybe it cost too much. Maybe she would just do it for cheap. But honestly, how much is Nicholas Brendon going to charge to do to come in for one day per episode and record a bunch of stuff in an office?
Well, he's got an hourly rate, you know?
No, but that's my point. It's like, I think that he would have been willing to do a deal. I mean, I don't know the man. Maybe they offered it to him and he was super unreasonable. But if you weren't going to get Kevin, you should have gotten somebody else in there.
Yes.
You shouldn't have tied it this closely to Criminal Minds, especially when it aired the next hour after Criminal Minds. Mm-hmm. Penelope's there as well. Is this just a 2 hour episode of Criminal Minds? It never gets a chance to be its own thing.
No. And I think, and if you remember the backdoor pilot, Sims is the one working the computer.
Yeah.
Exactly. So why didn't you let him just continue working the computer?
Because they wanted, you know, him out in the field, and I know.
Well, in the first episode, I could understand that. In this episode, it's not so critical.
No, but get your own tech person. That's what I'm saying. Especially since you're not going to do that much with the tech person. Like, I always talk about how comedic it is, the degree to which the characters rely on Penelope to solve all the crimes.
Yeah.
And this show was less interested in doing that.
Yeah, no, right? They needed a computer person periodically. No, it would have been give Kevin a week's work.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, they shoot 13 episodes, you get Nicholas Brendan in there literally for 5 days of shooting.
Yeah.
And that's all you needed to do. And I know you have to get paid per episode, so it's more expensive, but I'm just saying, it's like, having Penelope in there attaches it into Criminal Minds in a way that it absolutely should not have been tied. And that's a mistake they didn't make when they did the second show. When they did Beyond Borders, they didn't make that mistake. They have their own character.
But that was Erica's show.
Yeah, I know. God, wouldn't it be terrible if... And the thing is, I can't say... Wouldn't it be terrible if CBS mandated that? But I can't imagine CBS mandated that. I think you're right that it might have just been a cost-saving thing. But
for
honestly,
this,
who
for
knows?
This, oh, no. Yeah. For this, I suspect that they were limited in the funds. Yeah. And they had to find a way. And
that wouldn't shock me. And yeah. They thought... They will just ask Kristen to do this as a favor, to just come in for, again, 1 week's work and record all your parts for the whole season.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, as we've heard seen from interviews with Kristen, she works 1 day a week, you know?
Yeah.
So. Like, she comes in for the scene where they're all in the office.
Yeah.
And then she shoots all of, she goes off on her own and shoots all of her scenes sitting in front of the computer. And then every now and then she's in a scene at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
But, you know. Really not that often.
Yeah. But she solves most of the crimes.
Oh, she solves almost all of the crimes. Honestly, as my analysis has proven, most of the crimes could have been solved a lot faster if they had just gone to Penelope sooner.
In the first place. But then we wouldn't have a show.
I know. Because it's so hard to write a show about profiling. The problem is, it's like, if you have a character who has... at her fingertips, every database in the entire world, it's surprising how easy it is to solve crimes. Especially when, honestly, like, there is seriously an episode where she's like, okay, he was adopted, it was a closed adoption. I'll just press the one button that opens the closed adoption. Oh, it was a sealed file. I'll just press the button here on my computer that undoes a judicial seal on a file. Like, come on. It's ridiculous. But you do enjoy it. Okay, before we wrap this up, I want to say that this is the episode where, for the third time on the show now, they're like, I guess demons are real in the world of Criminal Minds?
And I'm okay. Well, no, in the world of suspect behavior.
Well, no, because there have been, we literally just talked about the arson episode that ended with demons are real.
Oh, yeah, well. Yes, but in Criminal Minds.
This episode, they get to the end and out of nowhere, because the team is off saving the girl. He's going to have a final conversation with the killer, and they just start talking about demonology. And he's like, you're named after Samael. Do you see yourself as an angel of the Lord? It's like, you're named after Demon Marcosius. And I'm like, no, Marcus predated demonology as a name. That's just not true.
Well, it's the same thing with Samuel. Samuel was a prophet.
Samael, the idea of that thing. Samael, no, the name Samuel existed before the story of the angel Samael.
Yes, because, yes, he's called, it's Samuel.
Yeah.
He is named after Samuel, who was way back in the Old Testament.
And
very
was back a in prophet, the Old Testament.
A prophet of the Lord.
And which you have to remember is the A-L at the end means it's, by God or for God.
Yeah, technically it's E-L. So people E-L, who spell it U-E-L actually have the correct spelling, but.
Yes.
Anyway, that's a little bit of, yes, they're talking about that. Well, okay, you know, so.
And then they have this insane conversation that suggests that that guy's a real demon.
Mm-hmm.
And then he immediately goes to talk to his priest.
Yeah. But
I loved his scene with his priest.
Yes, I thought, what a wonderful way to end that episode, because it was so horrible. And you
so bleak, so much darkness. How do you deal with this world? Like, how do you face this world and go back to work tomorrow?
Because he goes all the time into these. He does go into their heads. He is definitely the Will Graham of this world.
Oh, completely. More so than Jason Gideon ever was.
Yeah.
And, Jason Gideon's that type of character, but he doesn't go into their heads the way Sam does.
Yes. And the bishop, it was so nice to watch the bishop being just this nice guy and giving mm-hmm. him some advice. Critiquing his art and telling him, well, you know, they say there are things in black holes.
Pastoral counseling through art therapy, which is nice. You know? I was like, what if... No, but it's interesting because they talk about the philosophy of black holes, which is, but the thing is, it's like, it's not nothingness. It's a living thing that is consuming other things is his theory of what a black hole is.
Yeah.
Like you say, it's nothingness, but it's not nothingness. It is a living thing that is consuming the things around it. Things that don't exist, things that are nothing, things that are inert, don't consume things. And he's like, so there is a reason to believe that that makes it, in some definition of the term, alive, and they go back into the nature and the mind of God.
Yeah, I mean, it was all very, like, I'm not sitting here screaming about how they get sort of religion screwed up. If this world wants to accept that there are demons in the world,
yeah,
well, that's fine. Just set it up.
Yeah.
I mean, I watched Supernatural, for heaven's sakes.
You watch Supernatural. Like, you watch Constantine. It's fine. Yeah,
I watch Legends of Tomorrow. I mean, yeah. I am not opposed. Just do it right and make up your mind.
Yeah.
If there are or if there aren't. And and then go with it. But no, I did like, I mean, that whole discussion. And then when the bishop says, and leave the drawing here.
I know.
Just leave the drawing here. Do you mind if I lock up? Yeah, leave the drawing here.
Yep. And that's the thing. He's here. Like, don't take this stuff home with you, Sam.
Yeah.
Like, you've got it. You have to offload this stuff somewhere, and that's why I'm here. That is what a spiritual council is for. You have to be able to offload this stuff somewhere.
Yeah. By somebody who clearly understands just how troubled Sam is.
Oh, God. Like, right away, just with how he's treating him and how he talks to him. Like, it's a good relationship, and it's a good interplay these two characters have. I really liked that scene.
Yeah, no,
and it's
no.
Something you couldn't do on Criminal Minds.
No, instead of this that crap with Derek, you know. And I'm just going, oh, come on. You know, I don't want to talk about that, but this was a really, really strong episode. Stronger than the first one. The first one was okay. Yeah, it was good. No, it was a good episode, but this one is stronger.
Yeah, it's
but it also
really...
it's setting up this bleak, bleak, bleak world, and it should never have been on after Criminal Minds.
No.
It's just not
such a completely different experience than Criminal Minds.
Yeah. It's
you can't put these two things next to each other. Because it does not, it suffers in comparison.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, I mean, it's better than Criminal Minds, but it suffers by putting it after Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
Because Criminal Minds sets up expectations. And this is going to do something completely different than those expectations.
Yeah.
Right? And here's the thing. You can pair up Law and Order and Law and Order Sex Crimes, right?
Yeah.
Because both of them are very similar shows.
Yeah.
Just one of them is about, it's the exact same show with the exact same worldview. And honestly, 99% of the exact same way of dealing with crimes. But one of them is dealing with far more unpleasant subject matter.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas this, it's darker. Yeah, it's more unpleasant. But it is also a fundamentally different way of looking at the world. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it's not just the darker Criminal Minds. And you could see it and say, oh, they're just doing the darker Criminal Minds.
No.
That's not what it is. They're telling a different kind of story than Criminal Minds is telling.
And as I would argue, they're telling the kind of story that Bernero would have liked to have told on Criminal Minds.
That, I mean, if it turns out you're right about that, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I don't know. Now, what's interesting is Shintaro Shimazawa wrote this. Okay. He writes two of these episodes. I'm only noticing it because it's so tight, and so I was looking at who it was, so I went and looked at him. Seeing as I'm on
Criminal Minds,
IMDb, or? Because we don't have a Wikipedia bad for synopsis for these.
So what else did he write?
Yeah, he's also he directed an awful lot of stuff. So he's predominantly, I guess, a director. But the thing that would be of interest to both you and me is that he wrote two episodes of Intelligence.
Really?
Yes.
Well, how? That's coming out of nowhere.
And he wrote a couple of episodes of Ringers after Suspect Behavior. But wow, he did, and he wrote five episodes of The Dead Zone.
Okay, so he's just done a lot of work, but it's like Intelligence is one of the great TV shows, so...
Yeah, wow. And in 4400, he actually was the story editor for six episodes and wrote one episode. Okay,
so yeah, he was in the writing room of the 4400 as well.
Huh. Yeah.
All right, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, no, he is, and he was, I guess he's the producer, Fear the Walking Dead, Zoo, Reflection, MFA, Intelligence. He was one of the producers of Intelligence.
So, yeah, he was part of the production staff of Intelligence, worked the writer's room. Neat.
Yeah, yeah.
That is fascinating.
But it tells you in some way.
Yeah, no, the caliber of writer they're working with, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what are we going to be doing next time? What do people have to watch to be ready?
Oh, okay. Now I have to. IMDb is such a pain.
I know. Episode 3 and episode 4.
Just a moment. Okay, so now you need to watch episode 2, which is See No Evil, which is episode 3, sticking his finger at the nucleator episode. Yeah. And then number 4 is One Shot Kill. So I wonder if that's his takedown on
Timothy Omen's an episode. That's yet another sniper episode where they still do the thing right from the first problem, which is it's impossible to write to do an episode about catching a sniper because snipers, by their very nature, leave no evidence. And by the time you know that the crime has happened, they're already gone.
Yeah.
So they, whenever they do an episode about a sniper, the sniper has to have a very specific goal in mind in a way that real life snipers often don't.
Yeah.
And this episode is no different.
Yeah.
Like it's, okay. But that's something we're going to talk about.
Because I haven't rewatched it.
Oh, okay.
One has to
You just started See No Evil.
I started See No Evil and I was just
And then you were good impressed. And you stopped.
And then, yeah, I was good and I stopped. But all I can say is, and I am so happy that they don't treat local police departments like they're idiots.
Yeah, the way Criminal Minds does.
Yeah.
Literally all the time.
So,
Well, yeah, and I mean, so often, the problem is, right, you feel like you need to explain this stuff to the audience. Right? And so they're like, oh, well, the local cop will just be the dumb guy who we have to explain all this stuff to so the audience hears it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it makes them look, it ridiculously like local cops are all idiots, but B, it kind of makes them look like jerks for talking down to the local cops.
Well, and sometimes their behavior is worse than just looking like it. Their behavior is completely...
Oh, yeah, it's very disrespectful.
Very disrespectful.
But that is something we will get to.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. You're excited about the show. I'm excited about the show, too. So speaking of, if you want to hear us talk more about Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior... Starting with next episode, it is going to be a Monday bonus episode. So Thursday, the normal show is going to be coming out. We're talking season 7, episode 1-3 of Criminal Minds. So if you just want to meet us back here for season 7 on Thursday, we totally understand that. If you like Suspect Behavior, or if you're just curious to hear more about this show that most people missed, join us back here every Monday for the next 6 weeks when we're going to be doing special bonus episodes about Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior. So it's going to be episode 3 and 4, 5 and 6, 7 and 8, 9 and 10, and then for the 13th episode, it'll be just episode 13, which is, I think, Death by a Thousand Cuts, I think is the title. And then of course, just our thoughts on the series as a whole. So I hope you will join us back here for that. So again, next, this coming Monday, episode 3 and 4 of Suspect Behavior. next Thursday, back to Criminal Minds, 7:01 to 7:03.
Yep.
All right. So if you have any questions for us, if you have any comments about Criminal Minds, we'd love to hear from you. And of course, if you have any suggestions for other profiling related fiction you think we should check out or you'd like to hear our thoughts on, drop us a note over at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We'll see you back here twice next week. But until then, I'm going to say au revoir.
And have a good weekend.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.